Hello and welcome to Rhizone, the Horticulture Leaders Podcast. I'm William Clausen. I sat down with Jim Kennedy from Ball Horticulture to discuss the current state of the horticulture industry. It's pretty common knowledge, like many industries, that the horticulture industry was largely affected by the pandemic. So we sat down to discuss the last couple years, which had other factors such as the weather, the supply chain issues, and the pandemic itself. And we then discussed, what does that look like today? We looked at some of the marketing trends, and what does that look like for tomorrow and beyond? Here's my conversation with Jim. Hello and welcome to the Rhizone, the Horticulture Leaders Podcast. Today, I'm absolutely delighted to have in studio with me, Jim Kennedy. Jim is with Ball Horticulture. Jim, thanks so much for joining me, and it's a delight to have you here today. So Jim, you're currently the sales director, sales manager of North America, correct, for Ball Horticulture. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how did you get where you are today?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. And I have a background as a greenhouse grower. I grew up in a small family business in central New York, and I went to work at a greenhouse in Denver, Colorado, Welby Gardens. They supply the independent garden centers and landscape trade in the Front Range in Colorado. And then I joined Ball almost 20 years ago in a technical manager role, and I spent a lot of time working with our suppliers and with our sales force, putting together programs for growers to drive their success. And that's what I've been doing at Ball for the last almost 19 years.
You went from New York to Colorado, and where are you at now?
Now I'm in West Chicago, Illinois.
Okay. That's kind of the headquarters of Ball as well?
Yes. Area, yeah, Ball's headquartered right there in West Chicago. That's our global headquarters. Yeah. And we have several different sort of business units that are housed there in our headquarters.
Okay. I want to talk about Ball in a sec here, but just interesting yourself. So you have a background in economics too, don't you?
Yeah.
Just how does that play? So you're a grower, but you got some economics.
I have a few older siblings. They went to Cornell and got horticulture degrees. And when I was finishing up high school, my parents encouraged me to go to school for something other than horticulture because my siblings already had hort degrees from Cornell. Yeah. And I ended up going to Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. and studying economics and financial management.
Oh, wow. And is that a decision you're happy about? Because you still resisted all their efforts and went to the hort business.
Yeah, I'm really happy that I went to Catholic U, and the background in economics and finance has really helped in terms of an appreciation for data and understanding and being able to interpret trends and really to understand the business side of horticulture. And so I'm really appreciative of that background, especially when you have kind of volatile years and crazy, macroeconomic situations going on with inflation and things like that. And having that little bit of a understanding of some of that background from a economic standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was just kind of interested in reading your bio there. I was like economics, growers, sales. So it's definitely an interesting mix. So I'm not new to the horticulture business, but I'm definitely not deeply embedded like you are. Yet Ball is a big name. I remember getting little packs of seeds in February, March when my dad would order them online or order them via a catalog that would come in the mail. So I presume that's through the Ball seed. So how does Ball fit into the entire industry? And give me maybe a bit of a history of Ball. I think it started in 1905 or something like that.
Right? Yeah.
So just a little.
Yeah, and today Ball is a leader in providing young plants to North American growers.
Yeah.
So we provide seeds, unrooted cuttings, plugs, liners.
So it's real focus on young plants.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So Ball doesn't do a lot of retail sales then? Ball is just focusing on the young plants who then get sold, grown into their final product and then...
Yeah, our customers are the North American growers. Yeah, so we provide really the inputs. And then those wholesale growers provide the live goods into the independent garden centers, into the landscape, and into the mass merchant.
So I know you're not family, but I think Ball is fourth or fifth generation is running the company today. Is that correct?
Yeah, Susanna's the fourth generation, and her mom, Anna, is our CEO today. She's the third generation, and it was founded in 1905 by Anna's grandfather.
Yeah. Wow. Quite the history for sure. So can you give me a little bit of scope of how big Ball is? Company size? I'm sure it's a private corporation, so maybe there's just some metrics.
Yeah, we operate in about 27 different countries around the world. Yeah. and North America is our largest market, and that's the market I spend all my time in. And we have a sales team of almost 80 team members across North America.
Just in North America, the sales team's 80.
And our sales team that focus on serving the growers. Yeah. And our model is really local. We have team members in each of the geographic areas. There's not a postal code or a zip code in North America that we don't cover. So we're really focused on serving the grower with a consultative kind of model of understanding their business. And the motto that, that Anna's grandfather had was all the best and nothing else. So our focus is on what's best for the grower. And then we provide a high level of service in terms of the management of the orders, and the customer's experience is really important to us. So we put a lot of effort into that.
So do you grow your own plants as well, or do you just buy and sell?
Yeah, we, for Ball Seed as a distribution business, we do a lot of buying and selling. As a corporation, we do have a vertical integration into our own supply chain. So we, as a corporation, we do have breeding. And we do have, we do produce a lot of the seeds we sell are produced at a Ball-owned farm. And then we have in the vegetative annuals, vegetative perennials, we have breeding and production as well.
But, so you really have a definitely a vertical integration there.
Yeah, and more than, you know, well over half of what we sell though comes from non-Ball breeding or suppliers that are outside, you know, breeder producers that are outside of the Ball company. For example, like a Syngenta Flowers or Duman Orange or Cicada, Taki, the other breeders that we sell their product as well to the grower. So we have a broad portfolio, and we sort of, we really work to kind of curate that assortment to customize it to your business as a grower.
And so just interesting sake, for interest sake, how does that work? So you got 80 sales reps on the road, and you're trying to stay really focused. How do you jive that with like that local with that large company mentality?
Yeah, I remember I was working once in a parking lot in Bentonville, Arkansas, and there was a senior leader from Walmart that was there, and it, something he said to me stuck with me. He said, be big when you need to be big, be small when you need to be small. And that's most of the time. Being small is what you need to be most of the time. And that motto really stuck with me from that just simple thing that he said to me in that parking lot. And I come from a small business too. And so this mentality of a really a focus on the customer. And I think that keeps it close. It keeps it local.
So always stay local focused. You might have big supply to get there, but you got to stay local focused.
Yeah, I think the other way that we do that is by, we're highly decentralized. We're a very decentralized company. Like so we have, so there, what it really means is that there's not a lot of layers. There's a lot of collaboration. There's a lot of communication among the different teams within the company. So with our supply chain team and our sales team and our customer service team, finance team, a constant kind of working across. So it really looks like a matrix more than it does like a hierarchy.
So those 80 salespeople aren't constantly saying, let me see what Jim's going to say about this. That's not the model you have. They're really like independent units that really...
Yeah, they're not listening to me. They're listening to the customer.
Okay, so and that's how you get that local focus. So that's amazing. Thanks for sharing some of that. The one thing I really wanted to talk about with you today, you're front and center in the sales. You supply to a lot of those growers that then supply to the retail market. So you're indirectly or directly very, very related to the market. I'd love to just chat a little bit about the market, like just the past. You know, it's been a couple rough 3 years or different, maybe not rough, they're just turbulent, they're different. We had 2019 and then into 2020, the pandemic hit, and then 2021, which from anecdotally I'm hearing it was a great year in the hort business, then 2022 hit. So let's just talk a little bit about some of the trends and stuff you've seen in the past years, and then we'll talk about where that's going to take us. So where 2020 pandemic, is that probably the biggest thing that really set everything in motion for the next three turbulent years?
Yeah. And the pandemic is as sensitive as the pandemic was for the impact it had on people's lives. I'm very sensitive to that. But as a horticulturalist, I love the pandemic. It was amazing. I mean, what it did to our category, We have over, almost 20 million new gardeners in North America since March of 2020.
So how do you track that? I'm just curious. You're an economist, so I'm curious. So what's 20 million new gardeners entered the industry in 2020?
Since March of 2020. I believe it was the NGA, National Gardening Association data. There's some different industry associations that have kind of gathered that data and sort of pulling from those sources is where I get that number. And
wow. So with 20 million new gardeners, I guess it's no surprise that we'd eventually, obviously see a huge amount of sales and things like that. So talk a little bit how that affected. So 2020, I heard a lot of big box chains started canceling all their orders because they were being told to shut down. Talk to me a little bit about that.
I mean, 2020 was, there was a lot of volatility in 2020 because in the later half of March into April, we were taking on mass cancellations that were just by millions of dollars every couple of days, just going in reverse. Yeah. And the whole industry and the whole economy globally was just in a state of somewhat of a shock.
I know greenhouses that actually shut the power off to the greenhouse pretty much, right?
I think what we advocated a lot with the government regulations at the county level. We spent a lot of sleepless nights communicating with the government leadership at the national, local, and regional level to deem horticulture essential. Yeah. And being close to agriculture, being part of the overall kind of ag umbrella really helped us because we were and are an essential industry. And I think one of the other huge takeaways from the pandemic was the value of flowers, the power of plants in people's lives. It's amazing the way people engage with our product when life was handing them a lot of stress and they got flowers in their patio, got flowers on their tables, and what it did to bring families together, what it did to improve people's mental well-being, their physical well-being, their connectivity with their family and with their neighbors. And there's a lot of power in plants, and many of us, they grew up in the industry where plants are really powerful. They're great for people. Everybody should have plants. But the pandemic proved that because what it did to the overall situation for horticulture and the way people talked about plants, the way they engaged with them, just really validated that plants are super powerful.
So when we couldn't have people, we replaced them with plants. There's no social distancing required for the plant. So, because like you said, there was 20 million new gardeners that entered the space. So those people all now embrace that power of the plant. I've heard you talk about the power of plant a little bit on our intro call and stuff as well. Is like you said, everybody in the industry always believed it. And now you have a whole set of new believers. And so how did that carry you through 2020 into 2021? Because by all accounts, 2021, even though it was still a pandemic year, it was very different from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I mean, 21 was, will probably go down for almost all industry participants as one of the best years ever. And for us, every market that we're in as Ball around the world was up in sales. It was the first time ever that we were up in
every piece, every market,
every segment was up, and every customer that you spoke with, every grower that we serve, every conversation was just how high, how good was it? And the surge in demand, and for us, what it meant was a preparedness in terms of our inventory levels, the preparation in our stock farms, the way we had to purchase seed, we had to communicate to growers about what was going on with the supply chain, when to place their order, what to place, how to prioritize. So there was a lot of communication, a lot of preparation, and a lot of buying to get prepared.
So there was a lot of talk. Let's just talk about supply chain for 2 seconds, and then we'll go back to the other piece. There was a lot of talk about supply chain, that there was an issue getting, ships to port, all that kind of stuff. But is that the same in the horticulture business? But here I'm also hearing that there's 20 million new growers. Isn't that a huge strain on a supply chain as well? Is that there's just that much more growers or gardeners that want product?
Yeah, I mean, the extra gardeners was really the wind at our back. And we're a pretty resilient industry. We have a lot of small family businesses that make up kind of the backbone of our industry, and there's a lot of allied trades that work in to support the North American growers. And I feel like everybody kind of rallied together to do the best they possibly could to get product in, to get pots, to get soil, to get fertilizer. And they did a phenomenal job when you think about what we had to do to scale to bring that many more products to retail in that spring of 21. It was a massive team effort across every participant in the horticulture industry.
And because at that time, we weren't really talking supply chain issues yet. They really started hitting at the end of the year, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, towards the end of 21, the start of, going into 21, things were, ports were a little, there were some things that weren't perfect, but I feel like we weathered the storm of the supply chain pretty well and got where we needed to execute 2021 with phenomenal weather, phenomenal participation in the category, and just a really unbelievable year for the industry in 21.
So as a whole, looking even further back before we jump into 2022, is the hort industry, and especially at the retail side, is it a fairly steady, or is it a really up and down kind of, like, obviously we're going to talk about 2022 and there's weather, but let's take weather out of the equation. How steady of a stream of, or is there a lot of factors that go into
it? There's a lot of factors that go into it, but it's been pretty steady. You know, if you think about, like, after World War II, where the bedding plant industry really came into being in North America after World War II, and then when the box stores came into the industry with Home Depot and Lowe's and Walmart, really engaged big time into the category, and with in the Canadian market too, it just really took off in the 90s and brought a lot of growth to the industry. But in the 2000s, it has been steady.
Just a steady increase.
Steady growth. A lot tracks with housing, a lot tracks with how many stores are being built, how many new retails are being built. So those are all factors that kind of led to steady growth.
So suddenly getting a massive hit like that how would you see the industry rebounded or resilient? Like I heard you say, once the industry did quite well and how they reacted, maybe just mention a couple of things about that in terms of how the industry reacted. Did they do well? Did they overreact, underreact? Because the big box stores, if you would say, I've heard anecdotally as well, some people got, Walmart or canceled all their orders. And then 3 weeks later, we're going to put the order back on again because we're still keeping some of our stores open, things like that. So how did the industry react to that?
In 2021, I felt like the industry responded extremely well. We took a lot of risk. We put a lot of inventory in the ground. The growers planted to the walls and got prepared for what a spring that could have gone a lot of different ways in 21.
Was there an anticipation that it was going to be a big spring?
There was.
After not a great year in 2020 with a lot of hesitancy in that spring, there was a real buildup to the spring of 21.
Yeah. Once the retails opened, and even if we were social distancing and everything that we did in that late spring of 20, the foot traffic was unbelievable. The way product moved in April and May and June of 2020 was a great indicator of the way 21 might go. Yeah. And once it became clear that 21 wasn't going to be, kids are back in school, everybody's traveling again. That wasn't going to happen in 21. And once that became kind of obvious that the sort of stay at home and the work from home, and that was going to be a thing in the spring of 21,
instead of a trip to Mexico, we'll go to Home Depot and buy the plants, or wherever we buy plants, so the garden centers.
Yeah, every day. Yeah. All day.
Every day, all day. Absolutely. So bring us into 2022. Was there an anticipation that was going to be as big of a year? Because I think we had other challenges that we're still dealing with.
Yeah, I think going into 22, I think there was a lot of questions that the North American industry in every segment, from the independent garden center to landscape to serving the mass merchants, there was a lot of questions about where is it going to go? Where does it go from here?
Exactly. After such a year. Yeah.
I feel like the industry took a very responsible view of that. The growers looked at it in a very realistic way say, okay, well, we're probably not going to do that again. But what could we do? What might we do? And to look at it in a responsible way to say, okay, let's be prepared to make sure we have the product so that we could have an awesome spring. Yeah. But let's not think that we're going to grow by double digits again. Yeah. So there was a cautious optimism going into 22 in terms of the way growers were planning their production to make it a good year and to make it solid profitably. But there wasn't the sort of sense of euphoria that there was going into 21.
Like it's all uphill. It's all up from here. It's all better from here. There was really still a sense of...
Yeah. And all the planning and execution of the spring of 22 happened before the inflationary pressure really kicked in February and March. Yeah. The planning phase and the budgeting was all done. Mm-hmm. The plan was set.
Yeah.
So we had everything in the ground. We had... Everything was kind of set on go. And then as the spring kind of unfolded in 22, you had the inflationary pressure. The price of gas was skyrocketing. The price of groceries was skyrocketing. So as the consumer is supposed to be engaging with our category in the spring, that consumer is being faced with significant...
They're worried about heat and fuel and...
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, and then... Weather played a big role in 2022 as well. So what I'm hearing though is 2022 already started off much more just steady and humdrum than 2021 did.
It was this a little bit of a cautious optimism, like, okay, we have a solid plan and how it was going to go. But the weather, you mentioned the weather in 22 was lousy across most of the market. It was cold, it was wet, spring opened late, and we were kind of chasing it the whole way because the weather was tough.
Yeah. And did that reflect, so how did the consumers respond to that? You might have some data on that.
It's kind of interesting because you look at, like, we had cost increases going in. So the price at retail, so the average ticket at a retail store.
So me walking into a store, paying for my purchase, that ticket price.
That was up 8 to 10%.
Okay.
So the consumer was paying the 8 to 10% more.
And that's inflationary pressure and...
Based on the cost increases that the growers had necessarily put through because of the cost of transport and the somewhat inflationary pressure we had felt, not as significant as we saw in March and April, but there had been significant cost pressures that we had dealt with as an industry going into 22. So those were reflected in those retails.
So people were paying.
They were paying more. The footsteps were, the trips to the store and the foot traffic was down in 22.
And what caused that? Any ideas?
We have to see what the surveys say when they come out, but I think kind of anecdotally, I think that the inflationary pressure, I think, you know, you look at the cost of driving. People were taking a lot more trips too. Mm-hmm. You look at what happened with the airlines in 22 and travel in the spring of 22 was way up. People were taking
trips.
They
were all standing in lineups in the airport instead of at the garden center.
Yes. Yeah. So people were spending their time different ways in the spring of 22. And the inflationary plus the opportunity to go do something else. Yeah. I think that factored into the foot traffic. Yeah.
So how does this year so far compare to like 2019 or 2020? Like, is there any comparison being done there to say, are we just normalizing or are we actually going receding?
I mean, if you look at the grower sales and Dr. Charlie Hall from Texas A&M has done some really good work on this. If you look back to 2019, every segment in the industry did better in 22 than they did in 2019, significantly better in terms of a dollar increase, volume increase.
So even though 2020 down year, 2021 absolutely stellar year, 22 back kind of normal, more normal, it's still better than 2019 pre-pandemic.
Absolutely.
So that's an encouraging.
Yes.
Even with the inflationary pressures where some plants may even be 30, 50, 100% more expensive than they were then. Mm. And is that unit sales or dollar sales that, like you talked about Dr. Charlie Hall, is that unit sales that he's referring to or actually dollars?
It's in dollar sales and it's true in units too. And Charlie kind of looks at it both ways, but certainly indicates a healthy industry with a high volatility index, but a healthy industry growth over that three-year period.
And yet I'm hearing that there are some cancellations and stuff like that going on now in 2022. So we'll kind of segue maybe a little bit into where does this take us? Because we still are having some supply chain issues. We're still having inflationary pressure. Mm. You know, we're coming out of the summer, so we're going to be going into fall. What does that look like in terms of where the industry is going? Because I've heard there are some cancellations going on with bigger, yet some garden centers and such are ordering more. So where are we at right now?
Yeah, I'd say the market that we're facing right now it's dynamic. Yeah. We're, as an industry, each of our customers, each of the growers in North America, they're trying to figure it out. What's the right mix? What's the right plan for 2023? And I think a lot of it's dependent on the segment that you serve, whether it be landscape, independent garden center, or a mass merchant. It also depends regionally. Some regions did better than others this year. The weather was particularly rough in some markets and not so bad in others. And then by segment, some of the independent garden centers did really well, and they're ready to plant to the walls again. Yeah. They're feeling really confident. So it really depends on the segment that you serve and who their customer is. Yeah. And we're very responsive to that retail customer, that ultimate end user. So we're trying to dial it in just right. And the kind of four words we use a lot when we're working with our customers is plan for profit and plant to plan. So kind of make a plan to be profitable and follow that plan. Yeah, yeah. That if you have a really good March, don't necessarily go and buy a bunch more stuff. Exactly.
Or the inverse.
The pots might not be there either. And and if the weather's a little lousy, don't panic. Hold the crop and let's try and drive it through. Yeah, yeah. So are
we learning that, or is that some kind of an industry thing? Are we learning that from the years we had in 2020 and 2021?
I mean, it's really a muscle memory from back before the pandemic. We've done this before, because in 18, 19, 20, we faced every year we had to make a budget. Every year we were in a little bit more of a flatter or a slightly growing market at that time. So we have this muscle memory of how to manage our businesses to be profitable. Yeah. To make sure that we're doing the right thing with our costing, the right thing with our space planning.
So don't just go pull the plug just because we hear something. Let's just kind of look at our plan and look at our, we're going to be profitable and fill up the greenhouse.
And the weather has to be better.
Yeah. Just make it better, right? So that's really where we are now, is just in that planning phase. And so just as you were talking there, how does trucking play into this? Because we know that was a massive, I don't even know if we call that inflationary, that was just maybe a supply and demand, or just a fuel issue, or where it was. Suddenly trucking just astronomically increased in November. Mm. I know locally here, we're on the west coast of Canada, we had massive flooding and all that stuff, which impacted our local trucking situation. Mm. But I'm hearing that right across the board, trucking was a big issue. How is that playing out? I hear prices are coming down a little bit, yet those customers who need to get their product from the other side of the country are obviously getting impacted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, spot rates at the moment are coming down, but a lot of the trucking that we do is contracted in advance, because we need to get the product there by either Sunday or Monday. We need it to go through. So we contract a lot of the loads far in advance. Yeah. We work with a lot of third parties. A lot of our suppliers have their own trucks. They have their own equipment and own drivers. So trucking is a significant factor for us. We're investing a lot in a grower truck delivery. Rather than having FedEx or UPS bring your young plants to your door, we're leveraging a lot of grower truck so that we can get the product there right side up in a temperature controlled environment.
So the grower is bringing the product rather than contracting it.
Rather than dropping it into FedEx or UPS, it's gonna get jumbled, it's gonna get beat up, it might get frozen. So we're investing a lot into a truck delivery of the young plants on the plugs and liners.
Okay. And that's for quality, but it's also to impact price and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, the FedEx and UPS rates have gone up significantly.
They're directly impacted, and they will immediately raise rates, right? Yeah.
In many cases, the grower truck is a more economical solution. They
can do their optimization or whatever it takes, and multi-runs and things like that.
Yeah, but the cost of freight on a young plant, it used to be something we barely factored in. freight.
Throw a few hundred thousand in a truck and go, right?
Yeah, and now the freight is something that we're specific about, that we talk to our customers about, okay, the plug is this and the freight is this, that we're more specific about it, we're more crisp and clear about what is involved in this pricing and what how does it add up, so that they have a good understanding of what part is the plant, what part's the freight. And it helps our customers understand their costs, which, you know, the input, the live good input is only a small fraction of their total cost.
So even though the whole cost of everything is going up proportionally, trucking has exponentially gotten higher. So it's now become a significant factor in the cost of the plant to the end consumer, to the grower.
Yeah, like, you know, seeds are maybe up, you know, somewhere in 5% range, you know, unrooted cutting somewhere in 8 to 10% on cuttings, then plugs and liners that are produced domestically, maybe it's even up to 12 or or even more in terms of percent. But the freight, almost, if freight's not up 15%, it's 30, or you know, freight is a significant increase this year.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to definitely play a factor in you know, especially for people that are across cross markets, you know, shipping from the east to the west and then trying to sell locally. Do you as Ball and as suppliers to the retail market, or to the growers to the retail market, do you take that into account in terms of where your growers are situated and stuff like that?
Yeah, for sure. The distance is a factor in it,
more so than ever.
Because if you think about the cost per mile and the portion of the landed price of a product that is made up by freight, that freight element is such a bigger consideration now. So definitely, if you're, you know, and we, with our sales force, we do spend time saying, okay, if this supplier is a lot closer, this supplier, we can get it on a truck. We can get a wide assortment. We can get it on a truck and it's reasonably closer to you. Rather than say, maybe before the pandemic, we might've been saying, okay, well, we can get it from California to Georgia, or now we're looking more regional in terms of, especially on the plugs and liners, looking more regional in order to save on freight.
How has that impacted the ability to supply the market? Is that working itself out, or is there some serious logistical challenges there?
I mean, we're in a strong position as Ball when it comes to that factor, because we have the regional supply network. We have large plug and liner producers in all sort of pockets of the North American market in order to bring that local solution with a broad assortment of genetics that you can get there on a truck in your region. And that we're well positioned on that. I think that's just part of the having the market coverage. And we're fortunate to have that that kind of network of suppliers.
So it allows you to react should any other things pop up, and it's allowed you to react already, but even more so as you focus on that.
Yeah, I think growers are thinking ahead too. Like, we do see our customers sourcing the product earlier.
So they're seeing that happening.
Yeah, they want to get what they want, and they want to get it from where they would like to get it. So that, you know, if you book too late, then you might end up with a higher freight bill. So we do see that more proactive, partly because they need to get their pots, when they get their soil secured, and they want to get their plant material secured.
So is that a result of the supply chain lead time issues, or is it like, is that a result of that problem?
The lead times, I mean, we as an industry, we got a little spoiled with just in time. If you needed pots or you needed soil, you could get it pretty quick prior to the pandemic. I feel like now, as an industry, where we actually have more cash tied up in materials than we had prior to the pandemic. So from a business management, it's not great because we actually have a little, I mean, we need the stuff. So, I mean, we absolutely need the stuff. So yeah, we're willing to invest the cash to get it.
Cash is in product rather than in cash.
Exactly. So it's been it kind of feels like a shift back, actually, in terms of a cash flow management standpoint.
So you're using precious land, obviously, too, to store that product and all those factors as well. But I guess with inflationary pressures, if they continue, you're obviously getting the product at a cheaper rate. So there's some benefit in buying it sooner as well. However, so lead times, where do you see lead times going?
I think lead times probably peaked out maybe a month or two ago.
Okay.
I feel like it's going to start improving.
Yeah,
I hope.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. but that's what you're seeing generally. Mm-hmm. And is there still some serious supply chain issues in ports and all that kind of stuff like we were hearing at the end of 21?
I think the ports are improving. I think peat moss for us as an industry is still a real challenge. It was a challenge before the pandemic, and it's as bigger challenge now. The access to the peat moss, the cost of transporting it's heavy and it comes for a long way. I feel like that continues to be a challenge. So
we've talked a little bit about inflation and the lead times and stuff like that. And I want to talk obviously a little bit about some opportunities as well, but what are some of the other uncertainties and the things that have changed, like maybe work from home trends? How is that impacting where we're headed and the near future here?
Yeah, I think a lot of those trends actually favor our industry. I think the work from home is good for our industry, because if people are working from home, even 2 days a week, even one more day a week working from home, they're going to want the house to look nice. And I think that they're going to tend to garden more, engage with our category more if they're working from home. I think the movement from city to suburb, I think that the large generation of the millennial generation, buying homes, moving to the suburbs, that's or right. moving out of the cities, housing starts over the last couple of years, I think all those things, I think, favor horticulture for the future.
As a stronger, it's going to put more sales into the coffers.
More people engaging with the category. More people buying more plants.
So they're not just replacing, they're not just changing the way, well, they're changing the way they live, and those savings that they're going to have are going to then, well, let's make the place where I work nicer, which is plants and things like that. Absolutely. So even as an industry, a lot of those metrics play into like movements, like into the suburbs, housing starts, obviously, because the landscaping, because you get into both the landscaping plants as well as bedding plants. Like you do all, like there's pretty much all the industries in the flower business. So so you've seen that work from home, do you see that continuing? Because I know there's definitely, you're on the section there of North America. We're on the West Coast here. Is there variableness in like the locations of that, or is that right across the board that you're seeing the same stuff?
I think we're seeing it across the board. I mean, talking to colleagues and other industries, just the people that you talk to, parents at school and people at church, I mean, everybody you talk to, they're dealing with it. There's this hybrid model. It seems a permanent change that there's going to be an atmosphere of a hybrid now.
So it may not be as it was in 20 where everyone was working from home, but there's definitely a hybrid and you see that entrenching that it's going to. And so what are you as an industry doing to help that? Because obviously if that's good for an industry, what are you doing to keep that going?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the team members that we have that work in our businesses, we're pretty hands-on. Yeah. Like you can't ship seed from your house. You have to be a ball to ship seed. The same with shipping young plants and producing young plants. You have to be in the operation. You have to be in the greenhouse in order to produce this product. So a lot of, though we might benefit as an industry from the trend, many of our team members who work in our businesses actually aren't as much benefiting from that trend. So I think
at least not in their lifestyle, maybe in terms of business, but not their lifestyle.
So I think that's part of it, because you look at it kind of within your own operation of how are you managing the work from home in the type of roles in your business that afford that kind of opportunity. How are each of us managing that and being leaders in that area to attract team members to our team, to retain them, to grow and develop our teams? We face that each in our own individual businesses. And then we see that sort of macro trend in the culture and see, okay, how does that work? And I think what we do see is things like flowing product into the stores throughout the week. Like people are shopping our category 7 days a week. It used to be a weekend category. Now it's a daily category.
And is that a result of the work from home, that they're more accessible, or where is that coming from?
I think it's absolute effect of the work from home, because if they have a half hour break, a 15 minute break in the afternoon, they'll run out to the garden center.
Yeah, because and beat they're the close crowds. By, they're not in the yeah. city or wherever they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think through the social media part of like things that we can do of sharing when a delivery shows up, or we're expecting fresh plants on Tuesday, we're expecting fresh plants on Wednesday or Thursday, sharing, you know, through this kind of following through social media, just engaging with the consumer in an active way to share some excitement about what's going on locally.
So rather than saying, okay, we'll just make sure we're packed solid on the weekends, we now know the consumer has the ability to come to us on a Tuesday, so let's tell them that the product is here on a Tuesday when it gets here on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So you may actually see that even out and be able to plan and stuff as well, because I know, you know, some greenhouses ship on certain days because it has to get to the end consumer on other days. But if that mm-hmm. starts spreading out, it makes planning a lot yeah. easier as well.
We're also trying to put a more resilient product in front of the consumer. I see exactly. a lot of our customers and retailers. So if you're new to the category, we want you to be successful.
Yeah. I want to have a great plant the first time I buy one.
I want you to feel like a good gardener that first summer. Yeah, so there's a lot of emphasis going in to make sure we put the right product in front of the consumer. Mm-hmm. And as a sales force and as a whole industry, it's an opportunity and a responsibility to try and put really good product out there so that homeowner or that first time engager with a horticultural product has a great experience and comes back for more.
Which in turn obviously probably makes it more expensive to get it there too, though, because it's you're spending that much more time on it. So or what does that look like? Is that different than it was before, or is there a shift? Like how is that different than it was?
I think there's a shift in particular sharing. I think that the Instagram and the sharing part of the culture, where it's so easy to snap a picture and share it, that I grew this plant and it looks awesome. Yeah. And to share that in your feed, whatever feed you like to use. Yeah. But that sharing, I think, feeds that of the wanting to have a good plant. It also feeds the negative review, and nobody wants a negative review.
Yeah, exactly.
So if I bought my plant at retailer A and it didn't look good and I post it, that's a negative. No one wants that negative.
Yeah.
So I do think that puts a bit of pressure on. We also feel the benefit of so many new gardeners. We've been trying for decades to get more people engaged in our category.
Yeah.
The pandemic brought 20 million.
Yeah.
We don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's definitely putting pressure on to put good product out there. That's not a real cost driver. That's just a discernment and a curation and a focus and a conversation about what works well in this region for this segment, and leverage the genetics that are available. It doesn't cost you any more to pick the right ones. It's just a matter of taking some time to really think it through. What configuration, what tray size, what pot size, how do we merchandise it? How do we tell that story?
Yeah, absolutely. And just really harness that. So that's a huge opportunity, you say, for the industry. So for any retailer out there, is like harness that power of the plant, if you will, that person wants to feel good about that, is, and they're new to the industry, is use social media, use all of those mechanisms to make sure that they're a success in the avenue they chose.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just touches on something, you know, obviously it's coming on fall here. This is a time of the year a lot of people do a lot of canning. It's pretty much impossible to go out there and find all the canning supplies you need right now. It's very, very similar, probably the same thing. People are at home, they've now grown all those vegetables. Now what are they gonna do with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're sure you're a gardener now. Now you've got products. Flowers is one thing, but you also got vegetables. You gotta do something with them. And it's the same kind of thing. There's not really a supply chain issue, but we've never needed that many canning jars as we have now. And so a lot of industries are grappling with that same thing. And your advice is, take that opportunity because you want to keep that gardener. You want to keep that that person and not say, okay, I'm going to go to Mexico instead. I want to keep that plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what are some other opportunities that you're seeing?
One thing that comes to mind is data. We've the ability to capture data and the ability to leverage data to make decisions.
I think that's the economist.
I think it's really important to look at what does the data suggest. I mentioned Charlie Hall. There's other sources of data, working with whom you buy your plants, like work with your ball seed rep, work with whoever it is you can work with to understand trends and understand your own data, how to interpret it. You know, looking back across like, what is an average year over the past?
So don't look at the outliers. Look at what's an average year. Plan for that and go with it.
Yeah. When you say that plan for profit, plan to plan, make that plan follow the trend line back from 2017-18. Follow that trend line. This volatility of 2021-22, but where should it be? And I think that, you leverage the data. Super important.
And that's the sales data. Look at units that you're selling, look at the dollar value you're selling, look at all of those trends and really start.
But also look at shrink. Look at where is waste happening.
Like as in die off, what's waste, shrinkage factor, whatever.
The shrink in your operations. So if you buy in 100 plants, are you shipping 100 plants to retail? If you're bringing in 100 and you're shipping 65,
you've lost 35.
And so where that shrink is a hidden...
Because that's a cost that's increasing the cost of the 65 you are selling, right?
Yeah. And that shrink is an opportunity to improve your profitability as a grower.
You're in the sales world, but you're saying, no, production is where you got to also follow your data, because that production cost is an input cost to your sales, which is going to be...
Yeah, and looking at, I think that the automation, we're investing a lot of it within our supply chain and within, we're looking at suppliers to help with flat filling, to help with transplanting. We have collaborations with TTA on the transplant equipment. We have started a new collaboration with a company called Hamilton, where they actually, it's transplanting equipment to save you labor. Yeah. And we're working those relationships in order to bring labor savings to the grower. So looking for opportunities to save on labor is a really important thing.
And I would say it's probably a double whammy, because we all know that labor, it may be a labor savings, but some labor you can't even get right now. So it's actually helping the business become more efficient and not as reliant on the labor that may not be there anyway.
Yes.
And saving it as well. Yeah.
Yes.
So innovating technology, looking at that shrinkage factor. So really focus on your operations and so not only sell more, actually decrease the cost and make your cost more efficient.
Yeah, because I think that's important, because we want to make sure that our product reaches the retail at a good price point, that the consumer will feel the value.
So we can't just say, oh, there's inflation, they'll take a higher price. There still has to be that value. We can't just get taken in that wave of inflation.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of elasticity in our category. I think it's demonstrated that the consumer will pay more. We don't want to hit that tipping point where they're just like, oh, that's ridiculous. I can't pay
especially
that.
Especially now with 20 million new ones instantly at a tipping point, right?
Yeah, we want to be that a good value. Yeah. And I think that, and we also want to be responsible stewards of each of our businesses. And I think those are important areas to look at as being the best we can be.
So you talk a lot about the retail market. How do you, maybe just segue a little bit back to Ball, how are you helping your growers react to the market? Because you're obviously giving them their input cost. They grow the plant and then sell to retail, to the end consumer. You talked about making yourself more efficient. You're investing in, is there other things that Ball does and companies like that to vertically integrate the chain, basically saying we got retail, we got the growers, distributors, whatever you call them, and then the actual suppliers of that. Is there a lot of, I would say, like, assistance and help that happens throughout that market, or is there a lot of cutthroat competition?
There's a lot of collaboration that happens. We try really hard to support our customers' success at retail. So through, for example, would be sharing on things like cart banners on a product like Wave Petunias. We'll support our customers with the point of purchase materials to try and message to that consumer on the success they're going to see.
So
with
it's
that
not
product.
Just here's your young plant, see you later. That's not the way it works.
Well, we partner a lot with helping them to support their merchandising efforts through whatever channel they serve, whether it be landscape or independent garden center or the mass market, of providing point of purchase material, any kind of marketing collateral, marketing support to help achieve that ultimate success. We also do a lot with our customers on tying together from a business to business standpoint of, in some cases, mapping their material numbers to ours to help streamline the purchasing process so that we're saving them time in their purchasing offices by making the buying process more efficient making the payment process more efficient. So there's a lot of different ways that we can kind of collaborate and synergize with our customers to help them save time and money and help them sell more plans.
So you're not just selling products. There's actually a relationship, a partnership that's going on there. And that's something when I kind of moved into the horticulture business over the last few years, more and more, I've always somewhat been in the hort business, but not as much as in the last few years, is I've really noticed that about the horticulture business. It's a friendly competition place. There's not, I've come from other industries like construction and stuff where there, you know, it's head-to-head competition. There, it's almost like there's a, it's a whole family of growers that just get together and they grow plants and they supply an industry. Is that a good assessment of it, or?
I think so. And there's, we have a lot more in common than that. What divides us, you know, as growers, we're, yeah, we are friendly. And I think of many times growing up, even or. In throughout my time in the industry, of seeing when one grower doesn't have their pots or doesn't have soil to actually share with their neighbor. Say, okay, yeah, I do have.
What would drive that? Is that the power of plants? It just makes everybody a little more easier to get along with, or what?
I think it's our roots as working with plants, and we're a humble industry. We work with soil, we work with plants, we're close to nature. Yeah. I think that helps to realize that there's no reason not to work together as an industry, to help each other, to help grow the overall industry. And oh, there's something to it. There's something special about the growers and about our industry that we do tend to bond together. I think part of that's coming through some rough times together. If you have you rode the river with somebody, or can you ride the river? Yeah, it's that, can you work through those rough times together? And as an industry, we've worked through recessions, we've worked through supply chain disruptions, disease problems, quarantines, pandemics. Yeah. And I think that by working together through those challenging times in the industry, challenging times in the economy, it unites us and sort of forges us into a united front of the North American growers.
And that's what keeps you optimistic for the future as well, I presume.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jim, it's been an absolute pleasure just talking and learning and just talking about the past, where we're headed, and as much as it may still be turbulent or has been turbulent, just chatting with you and learning even has me feeling very optimistic about where this is going. And so, like you said, plan for profit and plant to plan. That's, you know, just focus on it, make a plan and stick to it. Thank you so much for coming out. It's been a delight, and also taking time out of your busy schedule to sit with me.
Yeah, hearing you repeat that about the plan to plan and, you know, and plan for profit and everything. Being adaptive is also super important. So as much as you, like, we've demonstrated this the ability to adapt as an industry over the past several years. And as much as I want to, the key to making a plan is that you know from which you're adapting. Yes. It's not that you're not going to adapt, but at least you know what you were going to do and what was the true north as you adapt in real time to the situations that you face on the ground. So it's just, I think that's the importance of planning, is that you have something from which to adapt. So I didn't want to make it sound
absolutely
too locked in.
No, absolutely. But that you have something. And I guess I think it may be a Churchill quote that says, you know, planning is essential. The plan may be useless, but the planning is essential, right? Because once the battle starts, the fact that you did the planning, you know where to start from. You're launching from a stable platform rather than I don't know where I am, right?
That's the key right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much, Jim. It's been an absolute delight. And thanks for your time and to sit with us and share some of your insights.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been great getting to know you, and appreciate talking about North American horticulture with you.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.